With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay. Welcome to the Texas Sports Nation podcast. I'm Greg Rodgen with the Houston Chronicle, introducing a very special guest today, someone that you'll hear often on these podcast airwaves coming up. I'm joined by Jonathan Alexander, new Texans beat writer for the Chronicle. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Houston. How's everything going today?
Everything's going good. Thanks for welcoming me. I'm glad to be here. Trying to get adjusted to this Houston heat. I hadn't experienced anything like this before, but everything else has been good.
You know, before we get started, why don't you introduce yourself kind of to the listeners, like where are you from? How'd you get here? How long you been in journalism? Just the facts portion.
Yeah, I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, originally. Born and raised, I went to college in Durham to North Carolina Central, moved 30 minutes to Raleigh, lived in that area, if you count college, for 11 years. And the last 7 years, I've been working for the News and Observer in Raleigh, where I covered a variety of beats from news, town government, cops, schools. And then the last 4 years of my career at the News Observer, I did sports. I covered Duke basketball, UNC basketball, and football and baseball, and recruiting. But I did UNC before I left. I was doing UNC basketball and football. Then I went to the Charlotte Observer. Opportunity to get into the NFL. Always wanted to get in the NFL. Went to the Charlotte Observer in July 2020, and I did that beat for 2 years. And at that point, after 2 years, I just felt it was time to move on, and this opportunity came about, and I'm glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you at the Chronicle. You did some great work in Charlotte, and I think the folks in Houston are really going to like your coverage of the Texans. So I want to ask you, you know, when a lot of us start a new job, you know, you've got orientation, you get onboarding and stuff like that. When you're taking over a pro sports beat, what is that process like to kind of get to know people? Because this is going to be the second time you've done it in 3 seasons. So take us through that.
So first task is getting to know this roster and who's on this team, and looking at the offseason moves they made, and watching film on this team and figuring out why they may have struggled or why they may have succeeded, and making a lot of phone calls to people that you deal with every day. Hoping to get introductions with coaches and GMs. So I even have a lunch meeting today. But I've been meeting with a few people, grabbing coffee, and hopefully have some more meetings out in the future. So just trying to get to know people, people in the industry, people I'll be covering, and trying to be as prepared as possible when training camp comes up later this month, because it'll be full go after that.
You know, the NFL is probably the most nationally followed of the pro sports, I would think. I mean, a lot of these others are sometimes it's very hyper-local or regional. If you look at baseball, hockey, I would say the NBA is on par with the NFL in terms of national appeal. When you're out there in Charlotte, what is the perception of the Texans? You know, being in a different conference, different division, they're kind of like, I'm not saying they're a faceless opponent for a lot of the NFL, but they're the newest franchise in the league, and I'm just curious, what were your impressions from afar of the Texans? Because you covered a couple Panthers-Texans games here in recent years, or at least one this past year.
Yeah. So I think, being that it is a newer franchise, like the Panthers and the Jaguars, you know, came in 96, and all three of those franchises, including the Texans, haven't won a Super Bowl, I think there isn't that much relevance there, especially when they're not winning. So, I follow football for a long time, so I know a little bit about the history of the Texans, but, you know, they just, I think in recent years, ever since, DeAndre Hopkins and, J.J. Watt have left, they really haven't been in the limelight. So I haven't really paid as much attention to them. I hadn't really paid as much attention to them. And you know, when you don't have a team that consistently wins, they're out of view of that national perception. So I didn't, other than the fact that the Panthers played them this year, hadn't really been paying much attention to them.
When you look at the Texans roster, who are some of the more intriguing players to you as this season kicks off with training camp later this month?
Yeah, I was looking at film, and one of the first observations that I put down on my notebook was, you know, Brandon Cooks is good at football. He can definitely ball, you know, and he's been at it for a while. I like the potential of Nico Collins. And then, of course, the Texans drafted Michi. So I think they have a pretty good wide receiver group, or the potential to be really good. And you know, perhaps that helps Davis Mills out, who isn't necessarily a franchise-type quarterback and probably needs some help to be successful in the NFL. So, you know, I'm interested in that. I'm interested to see what the defense can do. You lost Justin Reed. You draft Jalen Petrie. And you have Derek Stingley as well, who's cornerback who, you know, has that potential, who was drafted, you know, really high, a little higher than I expected. But I'm interested to see how those guys adjust and the wide receiver group.
You know, you covered a team in Carolina revolving door quarterback, you know, the last few years. You had Cam Newton and Sam Darnold, and Cam Newton came back. Teddy Bridgewater. Now you've got Baker Mayfield coming in. Obviously, I don't think you're going to have that revolving door here with the Texans this year. It looks like Davis Mills' job to lose. But what does this guy have to show, do you think, to like prove that he's a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL to where they're not looking in the draft next spring for a franchise quarterback?
Yeah. I think they'll look regardless. However, I think for him to be successful, you know, because every team is looking for a franchise quarterback. They look, if you don't have that guy, you're looking. And, you know, I don't see, like, when I think of franchise quarterback, I think, you know, a guy who can put you on his back and lead you from behind and do kind of great things. You know, I don't really see that much in Davis Mills. However, he has the potential to win with the right pieces around him. So I think when a lot of guys who aren't franchise quarterbacks, you have to take care of the football. You can't make mistakes. That's the easiest way to get you benched. So he has to play within whatever the game plan is and make smart decisions and be poised out there. And I think that will keep him as the starter until they find a franchise quarterback.
Lovie Smith is a well-traveled coach. He's starting his third NFL head coaching job. What are the biggest areas that you think he is going to impact or help this team as the head coach compared to his role as the defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think, you know, given, I think the Texans, they, you know, they struggled a little bit on defense, but I think that was because of the lack of weapons they had on defense. But I think Lovie did a pretty good job considering. I think, yeah, as he continues to build that defense and, you know, these guys get a little more experience, and they got a lot of draft picks next year. But Stingley, a lot of young players who have potential, I think he can continue to build off that. And we know that Lovie Smith has that experience. You know, what he did with the Chicago Bears and building some of the great defenses they had was very impressive. So I think one of the things Lovie has to continue to do is build, you know, great coaches around him, because assistant coaches play a huge role. I think Pep Hamilton has potential. I think he's done it. You know, he was fired a little early with the Colts. You know, a lot of Andrew Luck even said that. So I think continuing to put good assistant coaches around him and building that defense is what's going to help him be successful.
You know, Pep Hamilton, I believe he's a Charlotte native. Do you have any special insight into Pep?
I know Pep Hamilton went to West Charlotte High School, which was a rival of I went to two high schools, but was a rival of one of the high schools I went to. So I have spoken to him in the past, and we talked a little trash. But I'll tell you this, Pep Hamilton was a state champion in basketball, played football too. So I give him a lot of respect for that.
he wasn't the offensive coordinator last year. Tim Kelly was. Tim Kelly has since moved on. I think Pep hasn't been an offensive coordinator since, what, the Colts days with Andrew Luck? What kind of wrinkles do you see him bringing to Davis Mills' game? I mean, I know they worked closely last year as a quarterback's coach, but really this year as a coordinator, he has more of a chance to put his own imprint on the offense.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're going to run this West Coast style offense. I think, you know, what you saw Pep Hamilton do with Andrew Luck in Indianapolis and, you know, at Stanford as well. I think he has that experience with great quarterbacks. You know, Andrew Luck was always going to be good, but for him to be where he was, that was the influence of Pep Hamilton as well. So I think he knows what it takes to be a great quarterback. He can help Davis Mills continue to develop. And you saw Davis Mills towards the end of last year get better and be a lot more comfortable. So I think Pep Hamilton is a great guy for Davis Mills, and I think he's going to put him in the right position to succeed, or he can put him in the right position to succeed.
Training camp can be kind of monotonous. It starts here in about 9 days. When you watch training camp, the portions you're allowed to watch, What are the things that you like to look for?
Yeah, I like to see I look for guys who are winning their one-on-one matchups, guys who are out there playing hard. Like, I think back to last year, you know, I knew DJ Moore was going to be good because he was dominating anybody who was guarding him. Yeah, I knew Sam Darnold was probably going to struggle because he was throwing interceptions at training camp. Not all the time, but, you know, you don't want to be, you know, doing that at training camp when it's just practice. I knew the Panthers weren't going to be great when they were getting dominated by the Baltimore Ravens at their joint practices. So I look for guys winning their one-on-one matchups, guys who are working the hardest, guys who are being the leaders, the vocal leaders, because training camp in particular does not lie. If you see a guy struggling, or you see guys struggling in training camp, it likely means that they're going to struggle in the regular season. I've definitely learned my lesson thinking that the Panthers were going to be better and then seeing them in training camp struggle and they weren't good after all.
How important do you think preseason games are when you're looking at a team like the Texans, where so many guys are competing for jobs, or you've got these rookies trying to make their name in the NFL? Because a lot of veteran laden teams, preseason games are nothing. The veterans don't play. It's mostly just for the younger guys to get themselves on film. But for the Texans, how important are these three preseason games coming up this summer?
With the Texans having such a young roster and doing this 3 or 4 year rebuild, I think it's crucial. You know, they say you can't replicate game speed, and this is their first opportunity to see NFL game speed, and they'll be playing against the second and third string guys. So, you know, they'll have an opportunity to see what winning is like, and you know, with your best players being your young guys, you know, they have to go out there and win their position. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, preseason doesn't matter, but it is an opportunity to develop. And when I say it doesn't matter, you know, I need to correct myself. You know, I think it's not indicative of what you'll see out in the regular season. But it is a great time for them to develop and to see what this game speed is like.
So last year, the Bengals had not won a playoff game for 31 years. They shocked the world and go to the Super Bowl after winning 4 games the year before. The Texans won 4 games last year. Is there any chance they could repeat what the Bengals did, or is that a case of they don't have Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to anybody around this league, you even study football, especially in these last – it's always been that way, but especially in these last, 10 years or so, you have to have a franchise quarterback to do that. Joe Burrow was so far ahead of his game. You know, he wasn't the sole reason why they made it to the Super Bowl. The defense was a lot better. The Bengals made a lot of offseason acquisitions on the defensive side, signed some veterans to shore up that unit and make them better. But ultimately, it comes down to having a quarterback, a guy who can bring you from behind when you're down, a guy who can make big throws. And right now, the Texans don't quite have that. They haven't signed those big veterans, key veterans, and right now they don't have that franchise type of quarterback.
If I'm a Texans fan, is what I want to see this year is the team really – I'm not expecting to make the playoffs, but – I kind of just want to see them be competitive and be close to turning a corner to where next year in free agency, they're a little more active and maybe the playoff push comes in 2023.
Absolutely. I think you look at a team like the Detroit Lions, who, you know, they had one of the worst records in football. But in some of their games, they were really competitive and almost pulled off some wins. They even pulled off a close win. I can't remember exactly which team it was, but it just looked like they had a lot of young guys who had the potential. And if they just continue to improve, they can be a lot better. Now, they need a quarterback as well. I think that's what's going to have to get them over the hump. But I think the Texans need to show that too. You have to show that you're competitive. Even when you lose in close games, you have to show that you're getting better. You know, there's nothing more deflating than a team that loses big and by a lot of points and loses consistently by a lot of points. So the Texans have to avoid that. Their younger players have to continue to improve. I think that's what gives people hope. I think back to, you know, I've been following the Panthers for a while now, being that I'm a Charlotte native. I think back to the 2011 season for the Carolina Panthers when they had Cam Newton. Even though they went 6-11 that year, I believe, you know, Cam Newton gave them hope because you knew he was going to get better and you knew if they just added some pieces, they were going to be a good team. And ultimately, that was the case in 2015 for them.
When you look at the NFL, is culture an overrated buzzword or is that something really tangible with these winning organizations that you see around the league?
I think so. I think even you look at the Patriots, who were led by Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, you know, who had that sense of winning mentality. You've seen Tom Brady bring that to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, they're a serious football team. I think they have a consistent process. And when you have great leaders who lead from top to bottom, people fall in place because they see that. So I think with the culture, you have to establish a consistent culture in the team and people have to have faith in that culture. And once those leaders fall in line, the players behind them will fall in line. So I think that's very true. I don't know any team really that didn't have the right culture that really won a Super Bowl. I think the Rams had a great culture from Sean McVay. And it trickled down.
I want to ask you a few media questions. When you look at your two seasons covering the Panthers, what are some of the favorite stories that you did on that beat looking back?
Yeah, I think, you know, breaking the Cam Newton news last November was awesome because, you know, a lot of the smaller media guys and newspapers don't often break the big news that potentially that have the potential to be national news. And I know that guys like Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport are coming for those type of stories. So to beat them and have them credit me was very fun. You know, I enjoy writing features as well. You know, writing a couple of stories, one on Mick Mixon, who was a longtime voice and has such an impact on, you know, the Panthers and listeners. And he had a story that he had to tell doing that. You know, his parents passed away when he was 30, died in a plane crash. But, you know, he still was using that as motivation to be a great a great play-by-play voice. I wrote a story on Shaq Thompson, who lost his mother a couple of years ago. And she was a big influence in their life. And just hearing her influence and hearing how they, you know, fault themselves for her death, for not paying attention and how at the struggle she was going through and how that continues to affect their lives. And being able to write also news that anticipates moves happening. And I wrote a long time ago that Baker Mayfield, the Panthers had interest in Baker Mayfield and eventually it kind of came to fruition.
When you started covering the NFL 2 years ago, what's the thing that surprised you the most about being on an NFL beat?
You know, how year-round it is and how much interest fans have in it, even during the offseason. I think that surprised me a little most. How, you know, how important it is to have sourcing. I mean, it's always important for any beat to have sourcing, but you have a lot of sharks in the NFL. you know, world who are all trying to break news, and you have to be on top of your game. But I think just the year-round nature of it, college basketball, I covered college basketball and college football, and it wasn't as year-round as the NFL was, which is why I did college football and college basketball. So I think that surprised me about NFL. There's rarely a dull moment. Really, the slowest moments are these months before training camp, to be honest. It's the slowest all year. Everything else is almost full go.
Does it surprise you about the NFL that they can, I'm not saying manufactured content, but they can turn something like the schedule release or the Madden rankings coming out into content for people to consume when, I guess, before nobody would even pay attention to that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've figured out how to make the NFL a product, an everyday product, and people hang on to that. People really care about that, which is very interesting to me. Because, you know, otherwise I wouldn't really think that, you know, Madden ratings were interesting. I mean, I play video games and have played Madden in the past, but I wouldn't think that that was interesting because it's not really indicative of what's going to happen. But everybody is anticipating how good their team is. So they trust that stuff. And the schedule release is just so huge. I think that definitely surprised me too. You know, how much people care, but people want to know when the good games are and how everything is anticipation in the NFL, and they've learned to capitalize off that.
You spoke earlier that, you know, you covered Duke basketball, North Carolina basketball. What kind of experience is that covering those beats for the Raleigh Observer? Because you're talking Tobacco Road, basketball country. I'm sure the demand for news is just crazy on those beats from, you know, the people that consume it. So what was it? I mean, how similar were those beats, Duke and Carolina? How different were they?
Mm-hmm. I think as far as similar goes, you know, so many people care about those two beats. At UNC, it was more of a local beat. Like the people in that area really cover UNC, and it probably got most readers. For Duke, it was more of a national beat. People around the country love Duke. You know, you're dealing with two Hall of Fame coaches, Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams, who have been around the yard quite a few times, and dealing with them, you know, is a challenge, you know, at first. So getting to know them and being comfortable with them definitely helped me with an NFL beat, because if you can cover Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams, you can cover anybody, trust me. So I think the similarities really are, you know, writing it, people are going to be interested in those beats all the time. And you have a lot of fans, and I tend to think, to be honest with you, college fans are a little more crazier than NFL fans. I mean, they care so much. It's their alma mater. They care so much about those beats, but, they're very similar in those aspects.
So what was the vibe like in the state this spring when Duke and Carolina played in the Final Four for the first time?
Yeah, it was really split between Duke fans and Carolina fans. I mean, that was huge. Those two teams didn't want to play each other, or the fan bases. The teams probably wanted to play each other, but the fan bases didn't want their teams to play each other because they're going to have years of bragging rights. That'll probably won't happen for another 100 years for Duke and Carolina to play again in the Final Four. So now Carolina, who beat Duke, who wasn't even the most talented team, now they have bragging rights, and trust me, they'll talk about it every week that they beat Duke in the Final Four, and they sent Mike Krzyzewski home in his final year. So it was a crazy time in North Carolina college sports.
You know it. Going to close with this. You introduced yourself to Texans fans on Twitter last week. You asked for some restaurant recommendations in Houston. How many did you get, and how many have you tried out, you know, since you got to Houston?
Yeah, I haven't been out very much lately because I've been trying to eat healthy recently. So I try to go out like once a week, try to eat out. But I've been to a few really good Mexican restaurants and some taco trucks. Now, the taco trucks have been amazing. There's a place in the Galleria area called El Gato, and they sell tacos for $1.50, which I've never seen before. But that's up my alley. Like, you know, I love a cheap meal, and on top of it, for it to be really good, I was very impressed. But pretty soon, I'm going to try Turkey Leg Hut, see what all the fuss is about. Breakfast Club, see what all the fuss is about. and a few other restaurants that I have to go to. So definitely on my list.
All right. Jonathan Alexander, new Texans beat writer. Thanks very much for your time. We'll look forward to talking to you during the season, and take care.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Sports Nation podcast. You can read all of our coverage at HoustonChronicle.com/sports.